pretty excited to get to like speed bag that fucking depleted team, like the Sabres without Taylor Hall.
Yeah, especially and with like how many Sabres tokens the Bruins have left this season, they should be cashing those in for sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 37 of season 2, the Patrice Bergeron episode of Brews and Bruins, the Hockey Podcast Network podcast, presented by Bruins Diehards, sponsored by DraftKings, and I have a little thing to read. Oh, we're a drinkable podcast, you can taste. Basketball season won't be around forever, so get in on all of the action now with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. DraftKings is giving new players a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Claim your free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes when using code THPN during sign-up. Playing daily fantasy basketball is simple. Just pick your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Feel
the
sweat like never before.
I forgot the second line.
Assist means so much more with the DraftKings daily fantasy lineup. Baseball fans, you may have missed out on season-long fantasies, and now is the time to get in on all the daily fantasy action where DraftKings has even more ways to make it rain. DraftKings payday comes every day for players, so what are you waiting for? Head to the app now. Download the DraftKings app and use code THPN during sign-up this week. DraftKings is putting you in the action with a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. That's code THPN, and you can get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Only at DraftKings, minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for more details. Boys, what? Nice. Avoiding copyright with the cutoff there. Very nice, very nice. What a day it was today, and I suppose last night with the news breaking in Boston. Boston Bruins have landed Taylor Hall, Curtis Lazar, and why am I blanking on the other guy?
Mike Riley.
Thank you.
We got Taylor Swift Hall, Curtis. I don't have a good nickname for Lazar. And then Mike, not Morgan Riley.
There you go. We'll work on nicknames. The official list.
They'll come naturally, yeah. It's important stuff. You can't rush that kind of thing.
But, so I guess we could... Well, let's do beers first. Routine is necessary.
We've been forgetting them.
Yeah. Cam, how about you start us off?
Yeah, I am drinking a bright red kind of maroon beer here in honor of Chris's UMass, your 2021 men's ice hockey national champions. Shout out UMass. I didn't back them in the semifinal game. They proved me wrong, and I was right to jump on the wagon a little late, but better than never. Anyway, this is a subsurface smoothie sour with raspberry from Hitchhiker Brewing Company. In Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, actually, going outside of Boston and outside New England, hand-delivered by my girlfriend's sister, and also came with this bad boy for any of you watching on YouTube, fine wooden beer holder here. My girlfriend's sister does woodworking, really well made, and check this out, Chris, sure to jury, even got the THPN ad here at the bottom, so well, true to form.
They better not dump us then.
Yeah. Also got some nice coasters, which I did not have. Important for the proper beer drinking experience. Probably going to post this online. Anyone in the Pittsburgh area who might be listening, check out Handmade by Healy on Instagram. Really cool stuff. Everything from cool beer holders to like full-on patio furniture. All handmade and stuff. Really cool stuff. Anyway, this beer, I love a good sour, as anyone who's listened to the podcast knows. This is a smoothie sour, so it's thicker. It's got like a little pulp to it. I'm getting my coronavirus vaccine tomorrow morning, so I figured I should get some fruits in me, get hydrated and all that. So Good beer. I like the flavor a lot. Very rich and good smoothie sour. Got a little bit of a, not a milkiness to it, but definitely thicker. Drinkability on the lower end, definitely for a sour. Probably like a 10. Taste is right up there, though. I'm giving it a 37 on episode 37 here. Good stuff.
Good shit.
What you got?
I think we got a repeat here. I'm pretty sure I've done this before, but Abnormal Hazy Dreams. It's a hazy IPA. Yeah. Taste, there's not a whole lot to it. So it's a little fruity, not super hoppy. We'll give it a 19. Drinkability, as far as IPAs go, pretty damn drinkable. We'll give it 29.
Nice, nice. Once again, I have a Corona Premier because I like to be boring. I gave it a 47 on the last episode in terms of drinkability because we had a Mallory on, but
suck it, Cam.
You're gonna have to give it a 37.
Cam stays missing out on great Mallory episodes.
And taste is pretty low because it is a premiere. Well, I'll give it an 11.
Oh, should we just send Mallory the link to this?
Right? Yeah, let's get her on. I'd like to talk to her at some point. It'd be nice. I guess for both of you, since we got some repeat beers, I'm really looking forward to the official Nick Lanciani Brews and Bruins accountability beer chart, where he's going to stick it to us for our absolute lack of discipline when it comes to rating beers. But
here's my thing. I think how you rate a beer, highly subjective, obviously, and depends highly on what mood you're in.
I agree. It's kind of like it's like a fancy stat. You know, when we give it a rating, it's like the expected drinkability per 60. It's not always going to hit there.
Per 60 sips.
There. 60 sips. Per 12 ounces or 16 ounces, depending on what you're drinking, or 24 if you're like Mallory and ripping crowlers, which you'd love to see on the podcast. But
32-ounce crowler, yeah.
32. Wow. All right. Then never mind. Yeah. You'd really love to see it, but.
I don't think it was on the recording, but I did inform her that she was not the first person to drink a 32-ounce beer on the podcast.
You had to take that one from her. She's had a good enough month. It's all right. We can.
It's all right. But yeah, let's hop into some Bruins talk. You know, there's not much going on, so I guess we'll skip the Bruins talk. No, Taylor Hall. I guess we'll just start with the big name. And Curtis Lazar is in that trade, but I think the main attraction is obviously Taylor Hall. I feel like the Bruins like got away with murder in a way, like compared to all of the other trades that felt a little more even. This was the most lopsided, I think.
Ooh, I don't even know if the other ones felt even. I think the others were pretty lopsided in terms of return that seemed absurdly high. Like Nick Foligno, totally fine player. But I think kind of maybe overrated based on he had a 1 or 2 year stretch of being like a really solid offensive player and also obviously a captain, has a little bit of playoff experience, but you know, I think that stuff's probably the overrated stuff. Defensively really solid, should slot in really nice on a third line, but by no means worth a first round pick. And then David Savard, I mean, I guess if you really need help on your blue line defensively, David Savard, really solid defensive player, but gives you almost nothing, maybe negative on the other side of the ice. And, tough to, there were a lot of moving parts in that trade too. So it's hard to be like, it was a first round pick for David Savard, but essentially the Leafs gave, or the Lightning gave up a first round pick and got David Savard. I think at the beginning of the season, we were all kind of cold on Taylor Hall, being like, maybe we don't want this guy for whatever he's going to command. Lo and behold, you know, he always wanted to be here. And you get him for half price at the end of the year. And, you know, we didn't really need him to get here to this point. So and definitely going to want him for the stretch run. So I think an ideal situation, obviously you want to have that little time to gel before the playoffs start, but you know, that's here. He's going to get here quickly. He's driving. Excited to see him suit up.
Yeah, absolutely. My experience with this trade was kind of weird. I was just kind of hanging out last night, and I actually wasn't like stuck to Twitter like I usually am for most deadlines. And great friend of the pod, Mikey Radigan, jumped into a DM with us and told us that there was a one-for-one trade, and very much on brand for Mikey. The trade that he proposed, or announced rather, was a one-for-one deal between the Bruins and the Sabres. It was Schreck for Taylor Hall. So he sent that, and I just kind of was like, oh, that's funny, you know what I mean? And like kept talking with Mikey about other stuff, not realizing that the Bruins actually just acquired Taylor Hall. And then my other friend had texted me, who's an Islanders fan, was like, hey, congrats on Taylor Hall. And I was like, wait, what the fuck's going on here? And I jumped over, and I was like, oh, shit, we actually got Taylor Hall, which was a little concerning at first until I saw the return, and then I was like, whoa. You know, that's not to shit on Anders Bjork. He's a player that I have rooted for in his time in Boston, and thoughts going out to Lauren Campbell right now. I'm sure she's got some mixed feelings about this one. Another great friend of the pod, but the number one Anders Bjork stan on
I think she planet did Earth, like, really. I think she did like my tweet that I sent out being like, you know, I'm sad to see Anders Bjork go because, like, yeah. Dude never got a fair shake on this team and had some bad injuries at the wrong time. And I think at the early outset of his and Jake DeBrusk's careers, they were kind of considered on the same level of prospect. And
yeah,
it was kind of a crapshoot as to who was going to emerge to be the good player. And it turns out it was neither of them.
I feel bad saying this, but I'm not going to miss Bjork. Like, I don't think he brought like this key element that's like, okay, we're going to make a cup push. We need a Bjork. So in that sense, I think it's fine. I think, and we've talked about the Bruins trade assets before, and I think Bjork was always in there. Even DeBrusk as of late was in there. All those young guys were not necessarily like pushing to trade them, but they're bargaining chips. You should be willing to part with guys like that. And they were. I'm surprised it didn't take a first to get Hall. I thought it would take a lot more. But apparently part of that's just him really wanting to come to Boston and had that no trade clause or no movement clause that he had to waive in order to get here. So, so it wound up being a first, a second, and a third for all three players. Oh, sorry. Bjork, a second and a third for all three players. The Bruins
Bjork,
got
I believe, was a fourth round pick. So if you want to extract it out there.
All right. There we go. A second, a third, and a fourth.
Yeah.
I think that's just incredible work by Sweeney. I mean, I really thought they would overspend for a player and needed to overspend for a player to make a real cup push. But I mean, they got what they needed without overpaying, which most teams do at the deadline.
Yeah, it's tough to watch like the first few deals come through and feel like the market's been set, like this is the market now, and that happens every year, and then Sweeney will go out and do the like Marcus Johansson trade and the Charlie Coyle deal, and you know sometimes he'll give up a little too much for a player that doesn't end up being too impactful, but. I think that happens to a lot of GMs. And I mean, I would rather do these kinds of deals than overpay for players in the off season for free agents that can tie up your cap for a lot of time. And I think we haven't even discussed the Mike Riley deal and the Curtis Lazar part of this deal really, but I think those are two shrewd parts that have, you know, tangible effects on the team in the future. I think all these deals or both of these deals really could have positive impacts on the future of the team, because beyond this year, Taylor Hall has said he would love to be with the Bruins in the medium term, I guess he said, for the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
And having that commitment already and you know, being able to see how this guy fits in this short period of time before being able to offer him a contract and already having this pretty awful year behind him to maybe drive his price down a little bit. I'm guessing he's not getting $8 million a year from the Bruins for the next 3 years. That's helpful. And you get to know whether you want this guy in the future. If he absolutely sucks with David Krejci, see you later, man. Like, we don't need you next year. It's not going to help. And also kind of gives you an idea, like, if he absolutely meshes with Krejci, gives you an idea, like, hey, Krejci, maybe you want to resign. We're going to resign Taylor Hall. Maybe you want to finally have a winger for the next couple of years and end your career here. And then, you know, the Mike Riley deal. I always love just like getting a player that is at the end of his contract because, you know, I feel like hockey players are really simple people. They don't really want to move their shit. But if a team shows interest in them, they're usually willing to sign with that team. I mean, we've seen it with, you know, trading the rights to an unrestricted free agent, like 90% of the time that player will sign with that team. And I'm sure there's probably some negotiation going on beforehand between the team and that player, even though it's not technically allowed. But those guys are, you know, hockey players are like weirdly loyal in a way that like if a team expresses interest in a player, they'll generally show some sort of loyalty to that team. And, you know, by dealing a third round pick for Mike Riley, who seems to be a really good, maybe underrated player. I don't know if he's underrated, but underknown player because he's spent some time in Ottawa and has had a really good season, but also his fancy stats look really good over the past few years and looks like he'll be a really good addition to this team. But that's a guy you could potentially re-sign for next year and address some of those depth issues on the left side that have really been a problem since the injury bug kind of hit. And not to speak for way too long, but the Curtis Lazar part of the deal, I think I saw a few people talking on Twitter about like, look at this guy's cap hit for next year. He signed for another year at $800,000. And I feel like that's the type of guy who meshes really well personality and playing style wise with a guy like Trent Frederick. And if you can sign that guy up for another year and maybe save some cap space on the Sean Corrali deal and not re-signing him, you have yourself another fourth liner that, you know, you don't have to worry about that money on the table there.
Yeah. I mean, I think you touched on a lot of points there, but something I do want to kind of jump back to is like, just kind of our discussion that's been ongoing about Don Sweeney and the Bruins, kind of the state of the Bruins in general. I mean, I think it's funny that over the last few weeks, we've heard a lot of this, like Don Sweeney and the hot seat talk, and probably a lot more amplified on Twitter than any, you know, the Bruins weren't about to fire their GM necessarily in the middle of the season. Who knows what happened beyond this, obviously, but he went from that to, you know, riding higher than any GM, I think, coming out of the trade deadline. And, look, I mean, we've been saying it for a while, for weeks and maybe even months at this point, going back, that this is kind of it for the main core for the Bruins. And especially with how things have been the last few weeks with injuries and kind of some inconsistency up and down the lineup, I was really just kind of on that board where it was like, we've got to do something. We've got to buy or sell. And you know, I wasn't necessarily high on the idea of selling off with some of the talent that we have, but I also didn't think that a deal like this would be one that presented itself. So credit to Sweeney for finding it, obviously. As we've come to learn over the past however many hours, the context had a lot to do with it, with Taylor Hall really seeking out Boston. But look, at the end of the day, like, he is a player that, while having a tough season, obviously has a lot of potential upside and addresses a lot of the needs that the Bruins have on that second line. He's good on the transition. He can move the puck a lot. You know, obviously we got to see what the lines look like when people are healthy, if people are healthy, but up and down the lineup, this is the first time this season, and really even dating back to last year, where I've looked up and down the Bruins lineup and confidently said, like, if they can stay healthy, big if, this is a team that can legitimately make a run for the Stanley Cup this year. If you look at how things shake out, obviously we've got a long time to go before we're into the playoffs, but this is a team that top to bottom can be a force right now if things shake out well. But again, credit to Sweeney for finding the deal. I think I'm looking at like a projected lineup, which again, this is very iffy depending on health and stuff. But if they keep that first line together, you're probably looking at David Krejci with Taylor Hall and Craig Smith as a second line, which, you know, you can move around some pieces there. Nick Ritchie, who there's obviously
like five first names on that first.
Yeah. Line. A lot of first names there. I'm not going to flat out say two like elite first lines there, but at least like that could be a first line on some NHL teams between Krejci, Smith and Hall. And then dump it somebody like Nick Ritchie, who granted had a great start the season, slowed down a little bit recently, but was not somebody we necessarily wanted to like really lean on for goal scoring. And has been a bit of a surprise there, sticking him with somebody like Charlie Coyle and Carson Coleman, which I think would be a just ridiculous line as far as a forecheck goes and just pressing teams could really wear people out. And then look, pushing somebody like Jake DeBrus down to a third line. And I know they said he might be the one to jump over to the right side if you want to work in some other players, but I think taking even more of that pressure off DeBrus and having him be somebody who really is get in the zone, you know, try to force some turnovers because he can dig in those dirty areas sometimes. And again, not really rely on him for scoring like the Bruins have had to, which obviously hasn't worked out. It really does add a lot of depth to the lineup. And then just going back to Taylor Hall, I mean, like you said, there's no guarantee that he's going to sign in Boston. There's a lot of big question marks for the Bruins this offseason. But, you know, like Chris said, he's not going to grab $8 million on the market this year. That's just, there's no reason. Absolutely not going to happen. And for him to really express such a dire interest to go to a team like Boston with as many question marks as they have and already expressing that he's willing to sign for a few seasons, it's by no means a guarantee, but like, he's not an idiot. He knows the contracts that guys like Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand and David Pastrnak have. It's no guarantee that he's going to take a pay cut, but I think the fact that he's seeking out Boston and before he's even touched a jersey there is already stating that he would like to be there for a few years might indicate that he's willing to negotiate a little bit, especially after taking the money to run in Buffalo and how that backfired for him last season. So, you know, for what you're giving up, the Bruins have a lot more options than they did 24 hours ago or 48 hours ago or however long when you're listening to this. So credit to Sweeney. Let's see how it plays out.
Yeah, it's made me feel really confident now in this team and their contender status, because they were contenders, but I just don't think on paper they had it in the bag or really were like, okay, cool, we're definitely going to make a deep push. I could totally see with what they had, they could have been a first round exit or something like that. I mean, hockey's weird. You can get really hot going in the playoffs and it helps you and stuff. And this really helps this team. It's on paper. We'll see how it translates, but I have a good feeling it's going to translate. You're going to have some scoring outside of that first line, which has been desperately needed. And we're starting to see some of that come back, which is good. So kind of works out good timing there. In terms of, I'm still amazed it didn't take the first round pick to get him. And I think that's actually pretty huge for the Bruins to have that first round pick. We talk about late first rounders kind of just being glorified second rounders, but and I know this draft class isn't too deep, but you know, there's still some hidden gems that you can find late first round, and that could actually turn out being huge. You got David Pastrnak, 25th overall in 2014. Like, and granted, I believe that was a deeper draft. There were some great prospects in that one, but like it's valuable to hold on to that. It's very valuable.
I don't think the depth of drafts can be accurately assessed before the like mm-hmm. 3 years mm-hmm. after the draft. So
for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say it's taking looking, years. Yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter what the perceived depth of the draft is. You need those first round picks. And mm-hmm. I feel like you kind of want those second, third round picks, or at least like one of the two, especially when you have such a depleted system as the Bruins do. And, you know, given the age of a lot of the star players in the Bruins on the Bruins roster right now. You want to have some sort of flexibility, whether it be players who are going to be there when they need to take over, or draft capital slash trade chips to move for players that you can acquire to fill in when, you know, players like Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci and Tuukka Rask move on. It's part of that balance where, you know, we've been talking, hockey's weird. You want to push all in. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I feel like Tampa's been really successful at pushing all in, but a lot of that's due to the fact that they have a bevy of homegrown talent that turned out really well, and they've been able to maintain their talent without spending an absurd amount of money. I mean, they've made some big deals for guys like Ryan McDonagh, but then most of it was, you know, small deals, like getting Blake Coleman was a big one, and beefing up their third line, and now they're going out to get a guy like David Savard, and you know that works because they already had some good young talent. And I mean, their core is much younger than the Bruins core is, so they're set up for a longer term. So it's easier to say like, hey, we're going to be okay for the next few years and we can give up our first round picks, and the Bruins don't have that luxury. So
right.
It is more of a tightrope act for a team like the Bruins, and it's good to see deals like this, like the Mike Riley deal too, where you're giving up a third round pick to get a guy who can help you now. And like I said earlier, you could potentially find a way to re-sign him in the future. And then you're giving up a second round pick for a guy like Taylor Hall, who could potentially help you down the line already. That is good use of assets. Asset management in hockey is super important. And I think a lot of people have been, you know, getting on Don Sweeney to give up everybody. Everyone's available. Like, let's get a star. Let's make a game-changing move. And I think at this point in the franchise's curve, you don't want to do something like that, where like giving up a guy like Jack Stadnicka or one of your goaltending prospects could really kill you in the future, especially when hockey is so random and you could go absolutely all in and still get torpedoed in the first round.
Yeah.
And that would just look so bad.
Yeah. I'm really excited to see just kind of a re-energized Taylor Hall. I mean, again, obviously he's what, 3 years removed at this point from a Hart Trophy. I don't think we're expecting that by any means, but has obviously been in some bad situations recently and throughout his career. And to see him so excited to come to Boston and having that mutual interest and being injected right into a team that's like in the playoff hunt right now. I'm really excited to see what he can do. I mean, a lot of people have pointed to, like, for example, his shooting percentage is way down this year. I think it's like 2.3% or something like that I saw, which, yeah, 2.3%, his career average is about 10%. Not saying he's going to make that jump, but if he can pop it up above 2.3%, which I think is a very reasonable expectation, to 6, 7, 8%, that can be a game changer that can ultimately win you games. And with somebody like Taylor Hall, he's not necessarily a sniper by any means. Obviously has the ability to score and has a decent shot when he's got a chance, but is a really good puck mover, similar to Krejci. So we're going to have to find somebody on that line who can finish. Craig Smith is a great option. having a legitimate second line for the first time in like maybe a decade. And again, this isn't necessarily going to last forever. So it's not like, hey, we finally found that solution for David Krejci that we've been looking for 10 years.
We find it in the last year of his fucking contract.
Yeah, but
we did it.
Throughout the juggling that we've seen on the second line, at the very least, throughout the rest of the season, there should be a little bit more consistency, even if injuries do factor in. And the Bruins have some more options that they, you know, obviously defensive depth gets helped a little bit too with these deals, and that's really where it's been the issue. Not that the young D-men who have stepped in have been solid, but between injuries and as, especially as we get down the stretch here and those games meet a little bit more. You don't want to necessarily always be leaning on them. So having that extra depth up and down the lineup could go a really long way.
Yeah, and I think – I was going to say, I think, like, part of Hall's struggles, like, you know, he's been on a shitty team, which means he has some subpar teammates. That can play a role, but also I think just, like mentally where you are at with that organization. I mean, you get this big payday. The Buffalo is going to be – you know, an on-the-cusp team making a push to get into the playoffs. Who knows what's going to happen in the future with this team. Things are looking up, and then just it all falls apart. And, you know, what, he has two goals right now, right, this season? It's so, yeah. And I really do think it's like, you know, you go through cold stretches as a player and you lose some confidence, but you're able to find that confidence in something. But in Buffalo, there's just no source to find that confidence, whether it's in yourself or your team. It's just like in one of his interviews, he's like, I'm excited to win games. Like, they haven't done much of that.
Curtis Lazar said in Buffalo, they found a lot of creative ways to lose games.
Yeah.
Which is some candor you don't necessarily always see from hockey players. Also, yeah. Pretty exciting that these guys get to just like turn around and go play the Sabres, which one,
yeah,
you get like five revenge games from those guys. Mm-hmm. And two, I mean, even if you didn't have them, you're just playing the Sabres.
Yeah,
so I'm kind of hammering the Taylor Hall puck line here. Absolutely.
Pretty excited to get to like speed bag that fucking depleted team, like the Sabres without Taylor Hall.
Yeah, especially and with like how many Sabres tokens the Bruins have left this season. They should be cashing those in for sure. So a little extra sweetener to the pot there. Yeah,
as we've seen, they've struggled against some bad teams. Struggling teams.
They haven't struggled against the Sabres so much. So in their two games.
Small sample size.
Yeah. The other thing to watch out for, though, is the Rangers are kind of surging. The worry is no longer the Flyers, even though the Bruins didn't really do their job of dispatching the Flyers. They took a game and a point, which was, I guess, I think it was a split, right? Three game set, and they split it 3 points each, which at least prevented the Flyers from advancing. But then the Flyers went and got their asses kicked by the Rangers, and the Rangers are kind of searching right now, and the Bruins do have to play the Rangers a few times, and that could be an interesting finish to the season. And I think you know, these moves are all made with your eye on the playoffs, but one, you want to be able to have these players get their feet wet in some real hockey games. And I think, you know, some Sabres games are really good games to get their feet wet, but also having some real meaningful games against the Rangers are really, really good for getting prepped for the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely. We haven't done this in a while, but we don't have a schedule for it yet. But I'm just going to do it. The Hockey Podcast Network has something they'd like to say.
I'm Corey Crenshaw.
I'm Richie Suave Flores.
And this is Sporty with Corey and Richie Suave.
On the Hockey Podcast Network.
What did I just listen to?
Oh, this game is just bullshit now.
Oh my gosh. They actually made me feel uncomfortable. What was it? Panty what?
The game has gone to bullshit.
Panty melted?
Why do we record these during the middle of games? Oh, God.
Be sure to listen to Corey and I every Monday. We are your go-to source for the Arizona Coyotes on the Hockey Podcast Network.
Yeah.
It's a short and sweet, too. I usually
go check out Sporty, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, go check them out.
Go to group they got there.
Chris's bed. Do you have any takes?
Hopefully he comes back with a dog. That would be ideal.
Where from here? There he is.
Oh, there it is. Dramatic entrance. Ooh,
wow, look at that.
Going in style. Parkour. There it is.
That was some impressive parkour there, bro. So from here, do we have more trade talk, or shall we move on to the next little?
I did want to like further discuss Mike Riley.
Yeah. Let's do that. We haven't talked about him too much.
It's the state of the union here, Bruins defense. You know, you're playing with basically an AHL team. And who really knows what the long-term health of Matt Grizzlick and Charlie Coyle and Brandon Carlo are. You know, I think Brandon Carlo, we're kind of thinking, is dealing with shoulder injury or concussion, upper body, something. I think Cassidy said it wasn't a re-aggravation of the concussion, but then McAvoy, do we know what that is?
No, I just saw him sitting in a suit looking hella scared in the upper deck watching the 8-1 loss that became an instant meme. So I think he's just depressed.
Not sorry that I missed that. I tuned out after the second goal. I guess it was the third goal. I don't know. I had made the decision to tune out after the second goal, and I think I witnessed the third one. And then Matt Grizzlick, I mean, just hounded by injuries this year, and that's tough. And obviously we're hoping all of those guys are good to go for the playoffs, and tough to see it. I mean, tough to know, but also it would be a really tough go without those guys. But I think when you trade for a guy like Mike Riley, that kind of gives you that option of, you know, maybe a middle pairing guy who can probably move up and play on the power play. And somebody who, especially this year, has been pretty good defensively, but over the course of his career has been an absolute monster in terms of possession numbers and, you know, getting his team to score, really good on the primary assist numbers, which means he's, you know, if you haven't watched him play, which I haven't at all, generally means he's a really solid passer, finding guys who can convert on high danger scoring percentage, high danger scoring chances. And I mean, getting a guy like that for a third round pick, especially in the dire straits the Bruins were in, really, really good move.
Yeah, I just read somewhere that he, you know, obviously 5-on-5 scoring has been the big harp of the Bruins throughout the season. And like Chris said, he's great at generating assists, especially 5-on-5. He's second in the league in 5-on-5 assists per 60 behind only Cale Makar, which is UMass. Really impressive and should help. Yeah, and not necessarily like that one piece that we needed to push us over, but should help, especially with the defensive woes that the Bruins have had over the last couple weeks and stuff. So obviously not the headliner, but one of those sneaky Don Sweeney moves that could really pay off down the stretch.
Yeah, I was trying to find a quote from Riley. I think I saw it on Facebook. I was looking on Instagram, and I have no idea where it is now. But he was saying, like, the main thing he's heard about the Bruins is how tight-knit the locker room is and how, like, excited he is. I'm paraphrasing. I wish I had the quote because he worded it so damn well. But he's like excited to be introduced to that and kind of get involved. He said that's like one of the most enticing things about coming to Boston is, you know, beside their contender status or making a playoff push, but to come into just like an environment like that, I think. And we've heard that before from Tenorti, he said, after he fought Tom Wilson during the interview. Tim, he said it's such a tight-knit group, and you know, he's being, especially after that, he was inaugurated, I don't know, fucking, you know, brought into that melted, meshed. I'm not editing it out. He was just brought into it. They caught the Tin Man. They gave him his heart after a long trip down ensconced. The Yellow Brick Road. Ensconced? What?
Definitely the wrong word, but I like it.
I don't even know if that's a word, but I'm using it.
Oh, it's a word.
It is, yeah.
What is it?
It means to be like enveloped.
No, the word that I had said.
Oh, the word
you repeated it wrong. For? I just said I don't think that's a word, what I had said.
Oh, I thought you meant ensconced.
No, ensconced is a word.
Yeah. No, but I said like in. I don't know what I said.
I don't think you said a word. I think you just gave up on it.
Yeah, probably. But anyway, hey, yeah. So I think that's like, and that's a great reputation to have around the league. If players talk about like how, like,
were you looking for integrated?
Yes, thank you. Okay. I think, yeah, that's just such a. Like, that's such a great reputation to have, because it's obvious that not all teams are that way, and even like good teams who do have close players, it really seems like the Bruins just have that rep as being one of the most tight-knit groups in the league. And I mean, that's something that really helps you win championships, when you love the guys you're playing with like family, and are not just colleagues but are actually really good friends with them. That's fucking huge. And I expect that the new trio coming in will be integrated into that.
I'm really, really excited right for the Curtis Lazar, Trent Frederick bromance that's inevitably going to happen.
I mean, another man with three first names, Curtis Lazar, you know?
Oh, the other Mike Riley thing I'm excited for is I was just like, I don't know. I looked up his fancy stats on Evolving Hockey, and I was like impressed by that stuff. But then I went to my fantasy league, and I was like, why does anybody own this guy? And it's because he just never scores goals. But he averages somewhere between like 1.5 and 2.25 hits per game, depending on how you cut up the season. But I think he's around 2 per game over the course of the season. Which I think Bruins fans will be a fan of, like a guy who can move the puck and also take the body. So,
well, you know, they love taking the body.
Take the bodies, hit the floor.
Take the bodies, hit the floor. Take the bodies, hit the floor. Hit the floor. All right. Ah! Whew, all right. That's not the end of the episode. That wasn't our sing out. Might be later, but I wanted to move on to some goaltending if we don't have anything else to say. Well,
We can talk about the UMass.
Yeah, we should do that.
NCAA Men's Hockey National Championship.
I don't have too much to say because I literally got home from work, changed, and then like I came downstairs and my mom was like flipping through channels and found the game with 23 seconds left and paused it. So literally I just saw the last 23 seconds of the game and saw that it was 5-0. I knew they were playing and everything, but I had not kept tabs on the game at all. And then to just see that, it's like, okay, cool. I'm just going to like watch a championship celebration right now and I think a program that it was their first national championship. And it's just amazing to see. And, you know, I heard all the commentary after about the hurdles they had to, I was going to say the hurdles they had to jump through if it was the hoops they had to jump.
You have to jump through some hurdles.
For an English minor, I'm doing fantastic right now with the vocabulary. But yeah, just a great sight. And, you know, I'm not like a UMass guy or anything, but I'm a Massachusetts guy, and it's always great to see that. And Chris, you're an Amherst guy, so that's.
Oof. Bad pronunciation there.
Amherst.
Yeah, so
Amherst.
Being a UMass guy, I wasn't like a UMass student. I did take a class there, but
So then you're a UMass grad.
Yeah, I'm an alum. I mean, my dad is a UMass alum. I grew up in Amherst or around Amherst. I grew up going to the Mullen Center and watching hockey games. And so I do have a real emotional attachment to this team. And it's weird that they've gone through stretches of being competitive in the in Hockey East. And like, that was always cool. They were always like good when I was a kid. And then over the past, you know, decade, they've gone through stretches of being completely irrelevant. And You know, when Coach Greg Carvel came in, really turned the program around and definitely, you know, brought them back to relevance in the Hockey East, and then, you know, eventually brought them to their first Frozen Four 2 years ago, which was the last one that happened. And, you know, Cale Makar being the big player on that team, but also, you know, getting players like John Leonard on there, current NHL players, though there, I think there were like three current NHL players that were on that team. And, that was the team that I kind of assumed was going to be the one chance at a national championship for the UMass program and kind of fade back into being, you know, one of the top five programs in Hockey East. And turns out that was wrong. They just came right back and won the next one, and on the way beat Minnesota Duluth, the team that beat them in the final last time around, in overtime, and in the most exciting game for me in the Jesus dogs.
Jesus dogs.
That
superstar.
I'm like, that dog has lived there the whole time.
And oh, it's the neighbor one?
Yeah.
And I thought it was yours.
No, my dogs are pretty good while we're recording. The neighbor dog, just that dog has lived there like the whole time we've had this podcast. It's just like recently been super annoying while we're recording. Usually I think they keep him inside while like in the night hours, but not today.
I hope they listen to the podcast and just like make the dog bark.
Yeah. Fuck with you. Just like fuck this guy. Yeah, but a really, really great run to the championship. I think, you know, Drew, you said it well. Like a lot of adversity being faced here. Obviously, missing your top goal scorer and your starting goaltender, and a pretty good depth scorer in that semifinal, and still gutting it out, and you know, dominating down the stretch in the third period, and absolutely destroying in overtime. And one of those overtimes where it felt inevitable that UMass was going to lose because they were dominating so bad. It's just one of those things where like things are going too well here, there's no way they win it, and then they ended up scoring that game winning goal, and then yeah, just went on to obliterate St. Cloud State. And sorry to St. Cloud State and the waffle fry guy, but that was an absolute beating. Yeah, something I honestly never thought I would see, but really excited about it. Super happy for all my UMass fam. It's pretty cool seeing the minor but larger than expected overlap for me, people that I follow on Twitter who are also UMass people. So that was cool, getting to connect with people. And obviously Chanel is one of our good friends, and she's a UMass person, a current student, soon to be alum, but cool. Yeah, awesome stuff. Really pumped about that. I was very excited, and it's cool to, you know, just be the kind of person who brings championships wherever he goes.
Yeah, it's all you. They should be thanking you. No, really cool run from them, obviously. Like really well scripted in the sense, like you said, with them coming back and beating Duluth, and then it's always cool to see a team that lost in the final come back and win it. But I thought it was especially cool, like just how much of a, like a team effort it was. I mean, you mentioned like 2 years ago when they were there, obviously Cale Makar is like the headliner. Not that they weren't a deep team then, but this team only had four draft picks, so you know, nothing to scoff at in college hockey. That's still a decent number, but you look at teams like, you know, Michigan or Minnesota, they're going to have 7-8 guys drafted, you know, up and down the lineup.
Both teams they beat, too, on the way. Duluth, yeah. and St. Cloud State all always have a lot of picks.
Yeah, and for a team like Massachusetts, and that's one of the things that Carvel said after, was just, like, how proud he was to see a team like that that didn't have necessarily that, you know, elite star power. Not to say that they don't have very strong players, because obviously they do, but you know, a team without that number one guy who you know is going to make a huge impact in the NHL, to see them just really play a solid team game and it really culminating in a 5-0 win. I mean, that's a beatdown. There's no question there that they were the better team. And kind of a cool moment for them in those final. I think it's something that the broadcasters were talking about at the time, but you know, there's 3 minutes left in the national championship and you're up 5-0. You're not sweating it too much. And to have that opportunity to play, especially for the seniors, to play those last couple shifts and really just be able to soak it in and know that, like, not only is this it, but I'm going out winning a national championship. So soak in that last couple shifts. And that's just the moment that those guys are going to remember for the rest of their lives and look back on. And it's awesome for them. And obviously, being a Bruins podcast, we got a lot of Massachusetts overlap, of course, between Chris and Chanel and everybody. So just couldn't be happier for them, especially as a fan of a college hockey program that I also think will never win a national championship in my lifetime. It's pretty cool to see it happen for some other teams. And let me know, there's a little bit of hope there. So
also shouts to Bruins diehard friend Ethan Nash, UMass guy, and also future guest Evan Marinovsky, who's a UMass guy.
Yeah, I was I had some, wow, I'm really struggling this week, huh? I had something I was gonna say. Oh yeah, no, the head coach after the game,
Greg Carvel, yeah,
he in an interview he was asked, like, because they apparently took a timeout with like 3 minutes left. They asked what he told them. He's like, just soak this in. He was like, I'm like 50 years old or whatever, and you know, this is as good as it gets. And especially, you know, for those players who, like, no, they're not going to go on to play.
Most of which are not going
to
play pro hockey. Yet.
Exactly. Yeah. They know this is the last, like, yeah, they'll go on and play beer league. Maybe they'll go and play in Europe or some other league, but this is, you know, the end of the road for most of them. And, you know, to go out on top, I think for any player in any sport to go on top, absolutely the best way to do it. And yeah.
Now, while we're talking college hockey, real quick, real quick, while we're talking college hockey, there's a big news up here in Maine, and it was brought up on that broadcast and some other stuff, but the unexpected passing of UMaine head coach Red Gendron last week, some kind of health complication while he was playing golf and died unexpectedly. I know it hit close to home for a lot of people up here, obviously, even being far away from Orono here in Portland. UMaine draws pretty well, and you're talking UMaine. It's a lot of hockey, obviously, is their main program. So from everything that I've seen about him, was a tremendous guy. I was talking to our sports director, and he was saying how he was texting with him earlier that morning, just trying to set up an interview with Jeremy Swayman at the time. But, you know, and that stuff just happens. You know what I mean? It's obviously really tragic, but a big loss in the college hockey community this week. So just want to extend some sympathies there for sure.
Yeah. And while we're on the sad, like, tragic, sudden stuff, the 1 year anniversary of Colby Cave's death and the ceremony there, saw some really, really beautiful tributes. Maybe a little faux pas on the NHL's side, making Edmonton play after doing that ceremony. But yeah, Connor McDavid speaking out about that, and that's, you know, good on him for doing that, because that probably wasn't the right move. But
nice to see McDavid of all people saying something too. Typically a guy who really keeps to himself. So to see him, and obviously, not someone who has necessarily like embraced the spotlight as in a face of the NHL, but obviously somebody who hockey fans know and respect, and to see him come out and say that, definitely.
But also goes to show you how much of a footprint Colby Cave left. I mean, just every one of his teammates absolutely loved that guy and would go to battle with him on any day, because, I mean, so many tributes coming out. And, you know, shouts to Emily Cave holding strong through all of this.
I just wanted to go back to Gendron for a second, because when I was covering BU for the hockey writers, I went to probably like 50%, maybe a little less, of BU's home games, but I made a point to go to the UMaine game because I don't know, it's Maine, I love Maine, but you know, I got to go do the press conferences and stuff after. And not to like shit on the other coaches, but a lot of times when you have a losing coach and they're away, you know, they're not talking to their home press or anything, they kind of have some short answers or a little bit like kind of like get me out of here kind of attitude. And Ginger, not at all. He was like, even when the Maine had lost, he was like really friendly and really wanted to talk about the game, it seemed. And just one of the warmer coaches that during that my time there in those press conferences, just seemed like an amazing guy. Yeah, very, very unfortunate.
All right, should we talk some goalies?
Yeah. Yeah, we got Swayman and Vladar due to the Tuukka Rask stuff going on and Halak being on COVID protocol. We've seen Vladar before, and we talked about Vladar before, and I think we've talked about our excitement for Swayman, but I don't think we've touched upon seeing Swayman. I don't think we've recorded since Swayman's had his opportunities. And I mean, I myself as Team Swayman for life, very, 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 very happy with what I've seen. Was he even a net for that 8-1 game? Because I didn't watch that.
No, that was a Vladar.
All right, sweet. All right,
wait, cool. I didn't see the end. Maybe
that also was not on Vladar by any means.
No, I know, yeah. I know. I just didn't want like 8 goals against.
I mean, Swayman and Vladar were both victim. This week to the AHL defense.
Yep. But you know what? They're used to playing with them, so they should have done better. I'm just kidding. Yeah. No. Great to see Swayman. Like my thought has been, Rask or Halak are gone next season, whether it's Rask retires or like Rask stays on, they re-sign him and then they move on from Halak. And I thought Vladar would be the backup, them wanting to have Swayman more starting minutes in the AHL. But I think when you're looking at trying to have the best tandem you can at the NHL, I think as it stands right now, obviously small sample size, Swayman. I think even if you get 20 games out of him, I think that's way more valuable to your team than having him in the minors developing. I think he's shown that he can stand up to this NHL level and perform well, and just keep giving him reps, even if it's once in a while in the NHL. I say stick with him.
Ooh, disagree.
Ooh, let's go. We rarely have heads button on the podcast. This is good. This is good content. Let's go. First take.
I had a take. There was a goal in the there was a goal in the Flyers game that Swayman played, where Shane Gostisbehere scored top shelf on kind of a cross ice pass, and he went down really early and exposed a large portion of the net, and I kind of went, ooh, I hope that's not a problem. And I don't know if that is going to be the problem, because I've seen him do it a couple of times and it hasn't come back to bite him yet a second time. But the other thing I noticed, I mean, I think everyone's noticed, is he's a very aggressive goalie. He comes off the line to, you know, cut down the angle and make sure that there's not a lot of net to shoot at. And it literally took 2 games for someone to be like, okay, well, I'm just going to pass it now and leave a wide open net. And obviously some of that is to blame on the defense. You got an AHL defense in front of you, and you kind of maybe expect the goaltender to realize that and maybe be a little less aggressive in that situation. But if you take a still of what happened on that goal, that he got beat in that bad position, there were, I think, 4 Bruins players on one half of the ice, on the opposite half of the ice as the goal was scored. And, you know, you probably want somebody. But also at the same time, you had Connor Clifton covering a portion of the net. And Swayman could have positioned himself differently, knowing that Connor Clifton was there cutting down that angle. And So I think that is something that he has to work on in his game, and he really doesn't have a lot of pro minutes. And I think next year giving him that time in the AHL could be hugely beneficial, especially, you know, playing in a league where it's a little less structured and a lot of the onus is on the goaltender to make more saves on plays like that, where it's maybe your defense isn't going to be in the right position all the time, and you got to kind of go out on your own and make sure you're making that save. And I do think he has the skills. I don't think anyone's going to debate whether he has the skills to make insane cross ice save, like coming across the net, totally splayed out. He has that flexibility. He has that athleticism. Kind of reminds me of Jonathan Quick a little bit in that sense. Speaking of UMass, I think Dan Vladar has had that time and is a little more polished. And at the same time, I don't want Jeremy Swayman playing those 20 games you were talking about. I want Jeremy Swayman getting that full slate of games. Cause you know, I think on the last podcast we were talking, I was more on the like, hey man, let's pump the brakes on Swayman's the guy. And, let's give Dan Vladar some shine. At the same time, I think you want the guy who's more polished right now to be the backup. And I mean, if you are going into next season with a tandem of Vladar and Swayman, I think maybe you're a little bit in trouble. But yeah, I think I'd probably want Swayman the head of that tandem right now.
Yeah, I think what you went back to about the kind of aggressiveness, I don't want to call it an issue yet, but a potential hole there. I would say exactly what I was going to jump in and say. I saw Andrew Raycroft actually was tweeting about it right after that goal.
I forgot kind to of pointing out that tweet. That was one thing I saw that was like an agreement with a thing that I got roasted for on Twitter.
Yeah, no. And that's absolutely right. I mean, again, small sample size, maybe just a mental lapse or something. But take it from a guy who started a lot of games in the NHL. Andrew Raycroft knows what he's talking about.
Well, I thought you were going to say you. Take it from a guy who started a lot of games.
Yeah, me.
Okay, Hasbrook.
Yeah.
Damn Hasbrook.
No, I mean, it's something to look into at least. But the Bruins are fortunate. Look, I mean, to have two guys that, you know, realistically can jump into that role. I don't think, like Chris said, you don't want them to be the guys you're relying on. But to have two young options as somebody that you can potentially jump into a backup situation next year. It's good that the Bruins aren't necessarily handcuffed and have to move both of those guys up. So maybe you do move Vladar up because he looks like he is a capable NHL goalie at this point. I don't think, you know, we're writing home about him or anything, but as a backup, I think he could be serviceable. And giving Swayman maybe a year in the AHL to develop that game a little bit more, like we said, he is still so young, and both of these guys are really. And you look at the goaltending trajectory path, like, could take a while. So for the long-term benefit of him and you know, vis-a-vis the Bruins, it might be helpful to get him a full season in the AHL. But the Bruins are fortunate enough to at least have some options there and have that discussion. I also think it's hilarious. I was looking for that tweet. I Googled Andrew Raycroft Swayman, and I got an article from NHL.com, which is Bruins acquire goaltender Tuukka Rask. So I clicked on that one. It was like the fifth most relevant one, fourth one. Just to see what they were saying about Rask when the Bruins acquired him in 2006.
From the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yep. For Andrew Raycroft, of course. of course they compared him to like another Finnish goaltender who I don't know. But
you know, I don't wanna be early on this because, you know, the career's not over or anything, but I think the Bruins won that trade.
I don't know, man. You can't win the big games. That's the thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
Raycroft could, because you know what Raycroft did?
Andrew Raycroft famously won the Stanley Cup with Toronto.
Raycroft, you know, he took the body. He was a physical presence. Fought, you know, like
fought a lot.
Body hit the floor.
In defense of my Swayman take, so I agree with your reasoning because that's where I've been at for. Even like I think I tweeted like 3 days ago that that's what's going to happen. They're going to have Vladar be the backup. But I'd like to see him get some NHL reps next season. I would like to see that. And I think studying under someone like Tuukka Rask would be super beneficial, and it would be beneficial to get those games in the AHL, but I don't want to see it get to the point where he's not really being fully tested and that it's more like practice runs in the AHL. I'd like to see him get some time. And especially if you see, obviously the 8-1 loss wasn't Vladar's fault, but if you, you know, if Vladar becomes a streaky guy, then you do, if you're pushing for a cup, you do want your best two goalies at the NHL level. If that happens to be Swayman, then bring him up. Even if that winds up being halfway through next season, bring him up. You want your two best guys there. There we go. I think that's the rest of the 15 seconds.
Swayman gonna give it to you.
Swayman gonna hashtag give it to Swayway. You. I see. I don't understand. What the fuck is Swayway?
We'll never understand, Drew.
Just out of it. It's all right. It's okay. Just let it happen. Just let it happen. It's okay.
I love how it was on the news because you made it. You made it
like,
on the news.
I was like Googling what Swayway is because I figured it was a reference to something. And no, you just like put it on the news.
There's like a very like mild reference to like Treyway, which is like a little cultural icon from like, not even icon, cultural like little tidbit from like a rapper. But that wasn't even just, it just works. It's just, we all are, what is the way? Swayway. Swayway is the way.
Okay. I mean, like, it was not only you putting it on the news, but also, like, Drew tweeted something out, and you were like, this was the perfect opportunity to do, like, hashtag Swayway.
Yeah, dude. Drew was just like, look, if you guys are hating the team,
no question mark at all.
I thought Drew of all people would be on board with the Swayway, but if you guys want to hate on it, then I'll keep
not hating on it. I just don't fucking understand it. I'm not going to get on board with something I don't understand.
It gets the people going, all right? That's what it's all about.
This is a good reminder. This is a good reminder that Cam has a lot of sway being in the media and being able to put that shit up. So, if like, Cam, you have the ability
the
to dictate
the media.
Yeah, you have the ability to dictate, like, just, like, society.
I think the media should have less power than they do, and especially Cam.
Especially Cam. We are the media.
though I do trust Cam to have like the right take on things. Swayway, yeah. Maybe not.
Indie
but,
Bruins,
you know.
Media over here.
So you're hating on Swayway.
Are we indie? We're signed to a label. We're not indie anymore, I don't think.
Oh, we are signed to did I send you guys the meme?
Yeah, DraftKings.
Oh, I did. Yeah. I sent it to the group chat.
Yeah. I was sad that Lancey didn't get to see it. You gotta send that to Lancey.
I'll send it to Lancey. It's a great meme.
Big Father John Misty head, so
I didn't even know who it was in it. I just loved the meme.
Oh, it's Father John Misty.
Okay. I don't know who that is. But...
You want to sing some Father John Misty? I'll just take a hard turn out of DMX.
If we want to sing out to that, sure. Do it.
Is it time to sing out? Or are we ready?
Is it time or do we have more?
I don't know. Do we have more? I don't know.
I have nothing else on my agenda.
I don't know. I was hoping someone would like jump in so we could have like a friend on this call, but
should we call it Mikey? I have to leave soon though. I gotta get up and
I already sent him the vaccine.
Oh, there you go.
I think we could wrap it up here. If someone joins, we'll have that little off pod combo. But thank you for listening to this. I hope it was good. I felt like it was good. I think we had some more hockey talk than we've had in the past like 7 episodes combined. So that was great. And yeah, sing it out to that guy that was in the meme I sent.
It really couldn't have been a better time.
I never felt this in my whole life. You are my
I thought you were going to stop and hold and I was like, whoa.
People are boring, but you're something else I can't explain. You take my last name.